Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 103. We're going to have a very special episode this week as we talk about probably one of the biggest movies of this summer, The Dark Knight Rises. But before we get there, let's introduce our panel of potential Robins. And I guess before we say that, there will be spoilers on this show. So if you don't want to know what happens, I'm sorry. Probably not the best idea to listen to a podcast about the movie then. Joining us, we have Nicholas.
Batman! Okay, hi.
Who'll probably be most likely be the Jason Todd of the group.
Fuck yourself.
Hey, it's true. We have Anthony, who apparently isn't talking to us right now.
Sorry, did you introduce me then?
Yes, I did.
Oh, the sound went funny. I didn't hear you. That's why I didn't say anything.
Okay.
I thought maybe you were just drinking some tea.
No, I finished my tea before we started.
And crumpets?
I haven't had crumpets today.
And Anthony would probably be Dick.
Richard, not Dick.
If they called him Richard Grayson, I would say Richard Grayson, but they called him Dick Grayson 9 out of 10 times.
New 52 would have been a great opportunity to get rid of the Dick nickname, but no. We're going to keep calling him Dick.
Yes, because there's immature people around the world. We have two very special guests this week. We have Scott.
Hello.
And I don't know which Robin he would be. And we have Salvatore. Salvador, sorry about that.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
It happens. My bad. Right. And yes, we are going to be talking about The Dark Knight Rises. Well, actually, we're probably going to be talking about the entire trilogy, but we're going to focus on The Dark Knight Rises. And everybody, what was your initial impressions after coming out of this movie?
I loved it. It's not... It doesn't top The Dark Knight Rises, but it's...
What, you mean it doesn't top The Dark Knight?
It doesn't top The Dark Knight, but it's still good.
I think The Dark Knight is a high bar to set anyhow, and I feel like that's part of why some of the reviews have kind of been like that, like it doesn't live up to The Dark Knight, or, you know, Bane isn't as strong of a villain as Joker, and I kind of understand the comparisons, but at the same time, I've always felt like it should be kind of held up on its own, not necessarily like, oh, it's not as good as this amazing movie. It's still great, but it's not super amazing.
I think with that, it's never trying to be The Dark Knight, is it? Because what I liked about The Dark Knight Rises is that it kind of tied all three of the films together into like this nice trilogy, and it seemed like even though Nolan was probably like kind of making it up as he went along, it like he had like this vision of where he wanted to end with the trilogy, and it surprised me a bit actually in how much the Dark Knight Rises like went back to Batman Begins and The Dark Knight with some plot points, but with also with repeating some themes that were explored in the first two films, which is what I loved about it the most. But I don't think it's ever really like trying to be The Dark Knight. It's like, yeah.
No, and I would say that's one of the greater things about this trilogy is you can kind of watch them, and I mean, it's, you know, it's still the same central idea, Batman's still the main characters, but each one of them has a different feel, different tone to it. Because, I mean, this one, for the most part, is really kind of depressing when you think about it, because our hero's out of commission for, like, 75% of the movie.
Yeah, he's not in costume for, like, 50 minutes or something, is he? So I think...
I thought it was closer to, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah, he's just, like, Batman for, like, a fourth of it, I think.
I mean, he's really just Batman for, like, three scenes. His comeback, when him and Catwoman do the sewers, and he gets beat up by Bane, and then the climax, and that's pretty much the extent of it. But, I mean, in, you know, other movies, it would seem like a problem, but he does such a great job with actually making you care about what's happening outside of Batman that you don't really notice that Batman hasn't been around in an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing I will say about the trilogy is that, like with other movie trilogies, for example, other super movie hero trilogies, that like it ties, like they're not as, it doesn't, the third movie doesn't really reference the first two movies as much. For example, maybe like the X-Men trilogy or something. But for the Christopher Nolan Batman, I'm glad I saw the first two movies again. because you know it's like all the like you know small lines of dialogue that get really picked up again.
Yeah, I watched them again like over the past 2 months, and that's like a really nice way to keep them in the back of your mind, but you're not so concentrating on them.
I saw him in the cinema a double bill. Like I watched The Dark Knight Rises on Saturday, and the previous Tuesday I went to the cinema to watch Batman Begins and The Dark Knight back to back in a double bill, and I was really glad I did because with how it went back to both films in The Dark Knight Rises, so it's quite cool.
I don't think I could last through a 10, 11 hour movie session that much. I'd probably be out by the 6 hour.
Yeah. Well, they have breaks between each film.
It's still, I couldn't have done that. I love the Batman. I couldn't have done that with Lord of the Rings. That's like twice as long.
Yeah, it's
too much. It's too much.
I actually did that with the Batman trilogy. It was a interesting experience, but yeah, I think it's not something I want to repeat. Like, I love the movies to death, and you get breaks in between the films, but you are in a movie theater for 9 hours, and that's a huge commitment. I couldn't imagine the people who did it for, like, The Avengers, because
it was like the five movies.
It was six movies if you count The Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
So that was, like, a 13-hour commitment, and that's just insane. But yeah, seeing Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises back to back to back, really does drive home the fact that he does go back to the well, literally in this case as well. To some of the themes and some of the scenes and some of the symmetry that was in Batman Begins and The Dark Knight to a certain degree, it's kind of interesting because as he says, he was never he kind of had an idea that he could do a trilogy in his head. But it was always kind of planned that he'll do Batman Begins, and then when that was successful, he'll do The Dark Knight. And then when that was successful, he'll do The Dark Knight Rises.
Because when he did Batman Begins,
he didn't think that he could do Harvey Dent. That's why we have Rachel Dawes. Because he didn't think he could do the character justice, and then, but that's just so weird after The Dark Knight.
And it seems like now, like the final scene in Batman Begins, where Gordon and Batman are talking about the Joker, even though they don't actually, I don't think they name him by like his name, but they've got the card. It seems like a straight setup for the Dark Knight, even though it wasn't like planned as that when the Batman Begins first came out. It was just not, Christopher Nolan said it was just a way to show that when this film finishes, the character stories are going to continue even like after the credits have rolled. And then when they did come to make the Dark Knight, it was, he had a setup ready for himself then where he could just like introduce the Joker.
And I was about to say, I mean, even if you go to the end of The Dark Knight Rises, it's pretty much the same idea because it sets up a possibility of a future where, I guess we can start talking about the characters, where Robin John Blake, can possibly take up...
under John Blake.
Yeah, since you brought it up, I may as well get it off my chest now, since you brought it up. That was probably my only problem with the film, like one bit where I rolled my eyes at, where that woman said to him, "You should use your legal name, Robin," and I'm like, "What, really? Because no one has a name, Robin. If they're gonna do..."
Yeah, they do.
Robin,
they should have just... They should have just...
Call him Richard.
Called him, yeah, Richard Grayson or some bit like that, or just have his character named Richard Grayson for the film. It's Nolan trying to get that twist reveal in there, and it just falls completely flat.
I don't necessarily think so, because I think the problem is, I can understand why, it's like a lot of people assume he's going to be Robin, but I think that'd be silly if you'd be Robin with your first name being Robin. He's actually setting him up to take up the mantle of Batman.
Yeah.
It's just not to say, you know what, this is kind of, because he is kind of bits and pieces of all the different Robins.
If he had the rest of the movie,
but he has one of Dick Grayson's professions, and... But he figured it out like Tim Drake did.
And I was going to say, if he hadn't spent the rest of the movie essentially being Robin, it would have been just a goofy little, But because he said, like, if you look at his actions in the plot and what he said, he was Robin the whole time.
Yeah, and if you look at Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he has the features of everything you associate with a Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Except he isn't at... I mean, he's a bit older than any Robin, because he has to be in his, like, mid-20s, early 30s.
He's like a knifing age
or something like that.
But yeah, I mean, I agree with Anthony, too. I mean, when he said
it's
that,
just, I should mention, I did actually really... I loved, like, the idea where it looked like he was going to carry on with, like, the Batman legacy. It was just that thing with the name that really bothered me, because it, like, it was really jarring, and it just brought me out of the film. But, like, how it ended, I really liked, because it was... It reminded me of in Batman Begins, when Bruce tells Alfred that he wants to inspire people, and then John Blake walking into the Batcave is what he's done then. So then Bruce can go, like, lead another life, because he's inspired someone to take over him in the Batman role. It's just how, when she turned to him and said Robin out loud, I was just like, oh, why did you?
I would just say, it's probably not that difficult, but I did think that it also led to one of those awesome Batman moments where he's not on screen, because you then realize that Batman had this guy checked out where he figured out his entire full name. Because this is like, he's, you know, like, he's getting his stuff from Bruce's will. And that's one of the things. It's like, he's like, you have to use your first name or whatever to get this stuff, just to say, I figured you out. But yeah, I think he was a great character. And for the most part, he does become the main character of this movie for a bit, because Bruce is out of commission and Commissioner Gordon is out of commission. So he kind of becomes the central action star, so to speak, throughout the second act of the film.
Yeah, and he's pretty much the audience stand-in character, because he's the one who wants Batman to come back.
Well, he's the one who, I mean, what did you think? Because I've seen a lot of people have issues with the fact that he figured out who Bruce is just because of his look.
Well, I saw that as him, like, having, like, his character having some, like, detective skills, which would then make him a suitable replacement for, like, being the next Batman. That's how I read it. Because he does, like... Because obviously he's a police officer, and then he gets made a detective by Gordon, because of the plot, yeah. But he does, like, show detective skills, like, throughout the movie, so...
Yeah, he actually, I think... Because he's the one who figures out the plot with the... which I thought was an ingenious plan, actually. The concrete with explosive,
yeah. Yeah.
And I think he figured out something else about Daggett ahead of time, but... And even like, the smaller stuff, like how he knew how to find Gordon after he got pushed down the... after he jumped down the sewers, was a nice little nod, because he kind of put two and two together with the kid who showed up earlier in the film.
Mm. Yeah, he realized Bane was going to target Gordon after he went after the cops.
I don't know if he necessarily knew... Oh, yeah, that too, yeah, which... I didn't really get.
Well, I guess because he figured it was after all the police were caved in, right? So I guess he figured that you know, he'd probably go after Gordon, too.
Yeah, he probably just, like, checking all the water mains, and then he just happened to find down one.
No, he's talking about the part when, like, after the police officers are trapped underneath the sewers.
Yeah.
Like, the Bane's men go after Gordon in the hospital. And I don't really... I mean, they don't have this... But I don't really get why they went after Gordon in the hospital.
Because it was when Bane was taking control over Gotham, and he probably knew that Gordon would be someone... Yeah, Gordon would be a problem for, like, his Gotham, wouldn't it? So that's where I thought he did it. Because he just wanted Gordon out of the way, so then, you know... Everyone, like Batman and all the cops, were out of his way then, so he could just do what he wanted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was doing what he wanted anyhow with Gordon.
Yeah, it's true.
So, I mean, part of it, and this kind of goes back, and, you know, again, it's tying back to, like, Batman Begins. This goes back to the idea of Batman, where I think when Bruce is explaining why he's going to don the mask in Batman Begins, he says, like, what is it, as a man, I'm fishing. I can be destroyed, I can be ignored, or something like that. And that's kind of what happens with Gordon, because I guess Gordon is kind of the city's second hero because of the Harvey Dent stuff. You know, like they say he's a war hero in peacetime, but now that it's war again, he would kind of stand up and he'd be able to lead the city. And because his dirty little secret about hiding Dent's dirty act at the end of The Dark Knight, it kind of diminishes his thing where he can no longer be trusted by these people. So you kind of lose your hero, and Batman's out of the picture because he's a murderer. So I think it was an interesting throwback. I still don't know why he wanted to kill him, because that would make him a martyr.
Well, he led the resistance, didn't he? Which eventually helped save Gotham. So,
well, he didn't need the resistance. It was just a bunch of leftover cops who got outsmarted by Miranda Tate. What did you think of her character?
I knew she was going to be Tyler.
She could have been.
Yeah, she was okay. It's just because I kind of knew that reveal was coming as well, because of like, I spend too much time on the internet, and I obviously didn't look for spoilers, but I just came across like a picture of her one time stood on top of a tank in like her outfit, so which strongly hinted that she was going to turn out to be Talia Al Ghul. So
see, I didn't see any of that stuff, but as soon as they announced her casting, like, I was like, I don't care what they're calling her, she's Talia.
You
don't hire Marion Cotillard for that part, like for a part in this movie, and have it be explicitly be related to the Batman Begins, and then not have her as Talia. That would just be stupid.
As soon as I read that, like, Miranda Tate wants Bruce Wayne to return to charity work, I read that it's like, oh, she wants him to come back to the League of Shadows. It's like, ooh, that's clever word hiding.
It was actually a pretty interesting... I thought her character was kind of dull throughout most of it. But it does, I mean, in hindsight, a lot of her actions do kind of need you to realize that she's kind of playing both sides. Or, I mean, she's at least playing the good guys. I think the biggest one, of course, is the fact that she marks the truck for Gordon, which ends up being empty. And the fact that she's the first one who steps up to activate the generator, or the fusion generator, when Bane's holding them captive.
So did she have, like, a tattoo or something? When the
she had a scar on her back. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I some people are like, I thought it was well done.
That was interesting because, like I said, I'd already pretty much. I was gonna say that was with that scar she had on her back. Like I said, I already figured she was. Anyway, when they showed that, I thought it was going to end up being a reveal that she was the, you know, in Batman Begins, when he's training with Ra's al Ghul and he, like, cuts the one guy. I thought there was going to be some reveal, like, oh, that was Talia! Or something like that, but obviously no.
Yeah, and I think he cut that guy in the...
yarn, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great movie. I was just thinking very clearly. Batman was on screen.
Yes, and it's the first time he gets action in the entire trilogy, which sucks for him.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
He has some bat through balls. And that was actually kind of, and we'll talk about this as we go through it. Shaz Films had 15 things they didn't, you know, things that bothered them about the Dark Knight Rises.
I just read that list. Fuck that list.
And that was one of them that I didn't
90%
like.
Of that, 90% of that list is just bullshit nitpicking that is actually answered in the movie if you think about it for half a second.
Can someone link me the article in the chat window, please? Because I haven't read it.
That's actually one of the things that has pissed me off about this movie. It's kind of been the... And not that I'm against criticism, but a lot of the criticism seems to be like, if you think about it, or if you pay attention to the movie, most of this stuff is explained. Like, I was reading an article yesterday, and I got like three paragraphs in, and I'm like, I'm done, because a lot of this... He was complaining about the fact that the plot is inconsistent with the character's motivations, and one of his first complaints is the fact that everything that Gordon, Bruce, and Blake does in the first act is negated by the fact that Bane outsmarts them. I'm like, how is that a plot inconsistency that the bad guy was one step ahead of the good guy?
Yeah, that just shows that Bane's awesome.
Outsmarts people.
Yeah, Bane is an awesome character because, and this happens with almost all the villains in this trilogy, Bane actually accomplishes his goal. He's toying with the city for 5 months. If that's a good idea or not is a whole different discussion, but he does accomplish his initial goal, which is to he breaks the Batman, and then he takes Gotham hostage.
Gotham's reckoning?
He's Gotham's reckoning. And, I mean, granted, he could have thrown up Gotham at any time he wanted in the 5 months, but as he says, you know, fair OU works when you give people hope.
Okay, when and how did Bane find out about Batman and Applied Sciences? Because Talia was working at Wayne Enterprises, and
well, she didn't. She wasn't working at Wayne Enterprises at the start of the movie.
But she was working with Daggett, and he.
Yeah, she was. She was a stockholder. She was a board member. She just wasn't like a majority one.
Yeah, she wasn't. Yeah, she wasn't on the board.
And either her or Daggett could have just dug around and found stuff.
I don't think they would have found. I don't think they would have found Applied Sciences. I do think that you can hide a vision. I'm sure. I assume you can't hide a physical place, though. I assume they sort of blueprinted a building and assume like there's this giant room that's unaccounted for.
I did kind of love it though when Bane revealed that his sewer layer was right under Applied Sciences. I thought that was quite awesome.
Yeah. It's again kind of he's a smart guy, which we didn't get in Batman and Robin, but Bane he's an intelligent brute, and it works in this movie because he's one step ahead of them for throughout the entire movie except for the climax, obviously. So yeah, it was just a lot of the criticism and complaints are just seem to be like minor nitpicks that people are blown out of proportion.
He did kind of get taken out a little bit too easily. I mean, I know it was getting to the end of the film when they needed to wrap everything up, but the Catwoman just comes along and shoots him with the Batpod, and then that's it. It just seemed like he'd spent he spent over 2.5 hours building this character up into this unstoppable force, and then Catwoman just comes along with a big gun and just blows him away.
The problem with that is that his character arc was done. Like, there was nothing left for him. He was, he had been beaten. It took Talia literally stabbing Batman in the back to keep him from being defeated irrevocably.
Yeah, and that's the thing I don't get about that complaint, because I've heard it before, is that we see that Batman bested him. Batman had him on the ropes.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, you get the Batman voice where he doesn't work that often when he's screaming.
No.
Where's the detonator? Where is it?
Yeah.
That part just killed me.
Now I know how that feels.
He must have friends.
But yeah, I mean, Batman has him beaten and all this other stuff. And Bane was pretty much going to cheap shot him at this point because he realized he lost. And Catwoman came through. And I will just say this because it's an odd thing. But yes, Bane's dead. He got shot by a giant thing that we just saw tear through layers of cars. It's shooting a human being from 6 feet away. He's pretty much dead. I don't get why people are like, we didn't see the body. Is he still alive?
Yeah, I took it like he was dead. I'm pushed
he was
that.
Dead, dead.
It's not like they're going to make a sequel to it anyway, so it's pretty like irrelevant if he's alive or dead. So
I assume you'll probably have Bane mask one face and Bane arm another face and his torso like a third face. He's dead. But yeah, and this is another criticism I heard, and I'm kind of curious. Does the reveal of Talia being the mastermind cheapen Bane's character arc?
Not particularly. Because this is what's bothering about people making that assertion. Is that revealing that Talia was there and who she was does not make Bane any less smart or capable. They don't say, oh, I planned all this out, or he did, he's just a big no, they, Bane still has to have been involved very heavily in the planning.
Mm-hmm.
There was also someone else there, too.
He's still organizing everything. That takes a lot of smarts. It just doesn't mean he's just a brute because he's someone who's higher above them.
He's not just a pawn. He was very. Again, it's people like looking at something, being like making assumptions, and being like, "Oh, okay," not even paying attention to the movie, which I think is a large problem with people's. Not, I don't say everybody who dislikes the movie or who hates it or everything. A lot of it is people going in with expectations of "I want this, I want this, I want this," and when they don't get X, they're like, "Well, this is entirely terrible, and I'm not going to give it anything the next thought at all."
Yeah, And it's kind of weird because I saw this, like I said, I went through the trilogy marathon and I saw this movie and it finished at like 3 a.m. and I figured I'd miss a lot of stuff. But like reading people, most of this stuff I understood and I was half awake at this point. So it's either like people weren't paying attention or people are trying to find these giant. I'm not going to say that this movie doesn't have plot holes. I don't know many movies that don't.
Yeah, all the Nolan movies have plot holes. That's a given.
They have plot holes or character inconsistencies. I think, and I put the dark, what is it, Batman Begins, people always point out the fact that he says he won't kill, but he sets up this death trap for Ra's. And the Dark Knight is the whole, like, so Batman left the room for the people with the Joker, and we never see what happens after that. And stuff like that. It's just that you do have a time, especially in this one, because from what I understand, they kind of reached the max with the IMAX screen. So it's not, I assume they edited the movie to the best of their abilities, but I don't think there's any major plot. Like, if the plot hole doesn't take you out of the movie while you're watching it, I don't think it's a big issue.
I'm trying to think now. I can't think of any problems with plot holes that I had with it, but I watched it in IMAX as well, so I was just kind of like, getting my head blown off by Hans Zimmer's awesome score in IMAX, because it sounded so good. Oh.
It brings up two criticisms that is also on Shash Film and I've seen often enough. Is one, how does Bruce get back to Gotham? And when he
Me and my friend in work were talking about that. It's the same way with Bruce Banner in Avengers, isn't it? Where he's like on the other, like miles away from New York City, and then he just finds like a motorcycle somewhere and manages to get back to the rest of the team in time to stop the big bad guy.
Here's how he got back. Hi, I'm Bruce Wayne. I need a plane. Gimme.
Well, I assume because he had no identity. He shouldn't have any ID and any money. But he's also filthy rich, and I assume he has, like,
planes all over.
He has money to start off elsewhere. The other thing is, nobody criticized the fact that we have no idea how he got around in Batman Begins for 7 years, and I assume it's the same idea. He's resourceful. That was the point of the start of Batman Begins. And it's the same thing here. How does he get back into Gotham? It's the one that drives me nuts, though, because everybody's like, oh, Gotham's like this fortified palace. They make it clear. There's this scene where they're like, Bane doesn't have enough men to protect every border of Gotham, which is why they have the army there. And this is Batman. There's ways to get into the city that aren't bridges, I assume, for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because he's got, like, stuff set up all around the city to, like, help with his Batman, doesn't he? So, presumably, he could put up, like, secret tunnels. Because doesn't he just go up to, like, a random building somewhere and the Batpod's just, like, sitting there ready to be used, though? It's in a garage or something, I think.
Wait, yeah, the Batpod.
The Batpod, yeah, when he lets Catwoman drive.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he has his thing set, which is another point I didn't even think. He does have, because he has the secret Batcave, which is from the Dark Knight, which he gets, where he gets his stuff for the climax. He has the Batpod secret area. He hides the bat on a roof. I don't really know why nobody noticed it in camo in the day, but...
Stuff like that reminds me of Gotham City. But in a good way.
Bane's guys don't have air support.
And I honestly don't think people were looking for it. I mean, to Bane, Batman was done. He wasn't coming back, so it makes no sense. And he already has the tumblers. And there was nothing really to combat that until the climax. And the other one, and I think this is the fact that he takes time to build the giant fire bat symbol. I find that one funny because it kind of goes back to, again, Batman Begins, where... what is the exact quote? I think he says people need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy. And it's kind of... they show that because that one cop who's hiding behind his wife gets inspired once he sees that. And this is why you have like, this giant army of cops attacking City Hall with the Batman... So, you know, it's more than like, oh, this is kind of cool, Gordon, you should check this out. It's kind of like, you know what, I'm back, and we're going to take back Gotham now.
that's one of the things that Nolan's Batman is about, wanting to show the people of Gotham that they don't have to stand against, that they can stand against the criminals and the corrupt, so. Yeah.
Yeah, again, I think it's just people trying to, you know, like, yes, it's kind of weird that he's making this dramatic comeback and he decides to take time out to build this giant fire bat instead of saving the people who are exiled or whatever, but it's done for a reason. Yes, it's kind of suspicious that Gordon showed this one, but it's movie logic. People just happen to be at the right time at the right place. It's the same way he found Catwoman no problem when he came back to Gotham to ask for her help. So yeah, I can understand people not liking the movie. I can understand people haven't, but I just find like a whole lot of this discussion has been like, oh, this movie doesn't make sense for this and that, and that. At that point, you're not really criticizing the movie. You're just trying to find reasons why you think you shouldn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved the dick out of it.
I said to my friend actually after we seen it, I said, I think it's definitely up there as a great trilogy next to Toy Story. And he kind of like laughed at like, the fact that I said that. But I'm like, no, dude, like Toy Story is a great trilogy. And saying like the Dark Knight trilogy is there next to it, it's a compliment. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I think Toy Story is
funny that you picked Toy Story.
Because Toy Story is one of the best.
Yeah, I know it's a trilogy, but when you think of good trilogies, Toy Story is not the first one that pops into my mind.
It's one of the first ones that popped into my mind, because it's a fantastic trilogy. I think the thing is people don't think of them as a trilogy because it's like, what is it, like 15 years between the first and the third. And it's a kid's movie, so you don't think of it in that term.
It's a comic book movie, which has never completed a trilogy.
Well, Spider-Man completed a trilogy. So well, it's
on good terms.
You didn't say good. You say completed a trilogy. There's two different things.
Mm-hmm. Nolan's Batman actually has like an end to it as well, though. So, which is the first thing that it's the first time it's ever really been.
Well, you could say that X-Men 3 had an end to it as well.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that was entirely too loud. That was supposed to be in my head, not out loud.
Again, I'm not saying it's a good movie. I'm not defending it on that, but it does kind of have an end with like. Wolverine kind of becomes the leader, and Magneto's all powers, and he has the thing with that Echo teaser at the end and stuff like that.
So it's not an ending; it's a to be continued.
It's not a to be. That's like saying the Dark Knight Rises is a to be continued.
Honestly,
theoretically, it could.
I don't think there's going to be an X-Men 4 or anything like that.
I mean, they rebooted it with Wolverine Origins and then First Class. So it probably won't be an X4.
They're going to use Days of Future Past to knock out X-Men 3 anyway.
Nope.
But yes, it is a grand thing that we finally have a. You know, it's amazing that we got the Avengers with the culmination of a huge project. But the Dark Knight is probably the first proper trilogy we've gotten in comic books, and we got those both in the same year. So kudos for both studios on that. I know people probably won't agree. I don't know to you know about this panel, but I would put the Dark Knight trilogy up there as one of my favorite trilogies now.
Yeah,
I would put it up there with Back to the Future,
Back to the Future is the third one.
Has there been any recent trilogies that have been well received, like, you know, like other than, you know, I guess Toy Story, but I mean like
The Bourne trilogy, I think, is considered pretty good.
The greatest trilogy ever.
Except it has the third one.
You can suck a dick.
Second one.
But
three is
awesome.
Two, that makes no sense.
Yeah, because for example, like X-Men and Spider-Man 3 both had like movies that, you know, were pretty panned, so.
Yeah. I mean, in recent memory, I think it would be Toy Story is the most central trilogy that concluded. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there was probably others, but it's the one that comes to mind. We have the Iron Man trilogy at some. I don't know. Can you count Marvel films as like a trilogy or.
It depends. They'll probably. I'd be surprised if they don't make an Iron Man 4, but
But I'm talking about it because part of it is kind of like the Avengers are in the middle.
With Marvel, they seem to be doing like in phases, don't they? Where everything that led up to the Avengers was phase one, and now stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man, and then the Winter Soldier, and the next four films are going to be like phase two leading up to the Avengers sequel. They're like doing it like differently in their own way. So.
Yeah. But
you've been mentioning. Actually, do you know websites that are listing things they didn't like about The Dark Knight? And I was reading on one site, I forget which one it was, where it was something like, so is there a DC universe or not? Do you know, like, because the Dark Knight Rises didn't make it clear that like, there was a DC cinematic universe or something, which I thought was like a really odd thing to even bring up, because
That's just people not paying attention to what Nolan says.
Well, I think
no one's explicitly said no.
Yeah, I think it's just people wanting DC to mimic Marvel's style. And this is a whole different discussion that I really don't want to get into on this podcast, so we'll save it for our, you know, in the summer movie podcast and stuff like that. I mean, going back to The Dark Knight Rises, we've kind of mentioned characters, but we haven't talked about Anne Hathaway's Catwoman, or actually Selina Kyle, because she's actually never referred to as Catwoman in this movie.
I think there's like a newspaper headline, but that's just like a quick throwaway deal.
Yeah, the cat burglar or something they call it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, because she is. That would be, she is the definition of what a cat burglar is.
Yeah, and it works. I think she was a fantastic
yeah.
character.
She was
yeah,
great.
She was like a, the way Anne Hathaway moved was like, she was like a dancer that just could like kick ass.
It wasn't even the way she moved. It was just the way that she can turn on a dime in a scene. Like when she first meets Bruce, and she's kind of acting like this innocent.
And she just flips the switch.
Yeah, and she switches and she trips him up. And then the scene with the Daggett in the bar where she starts breaking down in front of the cops was amazing. That was one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie.
I've been behind her as being Catwoman from the start. Like, as soon as she got casted, I knew she'd be great. And she didn't let me down. She's finally like given Catwoman justice in the cinema, which, I mean, it helped a bit. Like, she didn't have like some silly bullshit origin that was a way to give her powers to justify some of the stuff that she was doing. She was more like just like a cat burglar and stuff, and she was really good in it. So
yeah, that's the nice thing about the Nolan trilogy. He doesn't waste time on the villains' origins; they're just already there.
That's not necessarily true. He wastes time, or not waste time, but he does Two-Face.
Well, except for Two-Face, of course. But everyone else is just like pre-baked already, and you just learn about them along the way.
Yeah, and it's an interesting way to do it because it's, you know, you kind of get things, especially with The Dark Knight, where the Joker's there from the get-go. He's like the first, and Bane's actually here from the get-go as well. I mean, unlike the Joker, you actually never learn his origins, or you learn like three of his origins in the film, but Bane, you do kind of learn his story as you go along. I also love the fact that her cat ears weren't, like, she's wearing cat ears. She's like, she has goggles, and they flip up, and they have ears, and they flip down, and they're practical for stuff. And that was an awesome touch.
That's the Nolan thing. Taking something that would be inherently ridiculous and making it slightly more practical.
And another one of my favorite scenes with her is when she confronts Daggett, I think, for the second time. And that guy's like, is it tough to walk in high heels? And she like, kicks him in the shin.
Is Daggett in the comics? Because where I know Daggett from is from the animated series.
Yeah, he's
from the animated series, but...
Yeah.
I don't know why he changed his name.
He was originally supposed to be Max Schreck, but they changed to Daggett.
Huh, that would have been interesting to do Schreck.
I remember in the animated series, he's in the Face of Clay episode, because his company is what gets addicted to the face cream that changes.
Yeah, I don't know why, but they changed his name to John Daggett, which is
odd. They already had John Blake, so that was unnecessary to do.
That was really weird. I don't know if they just didn't like the name Rogan or what, but it's also been nice that, you know, they've been minor parts, but it's been awesome that we've gotten so many major mobsters in these trilogies. We've gotten Falcone, we've gotten Maroni, and now we've gotten Daggett.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see Rupert Thorne at some point.
Yeah. Thorne. Is Thorne... Wait, who was the one in Batman?
That was Falcone.
Okay. No.
Wait, no, you mean the first Batman? Or?
No,
the first Batman.
What was the character's name? I don't remember.
But it was a... It was...
I don't... It was none of this.
Yeah, but it was a popular
one. Somebody they made up.
I thought it was somebody... I mean, I don't know the, Oh, it was Grissom.
Yeah, Grissom.
He
was made up.
Oh, okay. I thought he was... Yeah, he's made up. but yeah, it was...
Thorne, too, but then they changed it to Grissom.
Rupert Thorne's just not going to get his moment in the sun, is he? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I thought, Daggett had a small role. It was nice. It was kind of weird, because Bane had, like, his number one henchman, who I don't think spoke at all throughout the entire movie.
He what?
It's the guy who was like Bane's number one.
Yeah.
He hung out like, and he was in the background like, of all the Bane scenes, but he didn't talk at all. And I think Batman just punches him once in the climax, and that's it.
I don't think I even noticed him, to be honest. I was too busy watching Tom Hardy be awesome as Bane.
What did you think of? Well, I mean, you think he's awesome. What did you think of his voice?
It was good. I couldn't understand like a bit of it. Most of it.
Oh, it was so good. He was like every Bond villain put together.
And I just love the way he said mobile. That just sticks in my head for some reason.
The opening scene.
I
just
love him having so much fun.
There's some
like,
scenes that I...
Go ahead, sorry.
No, it's alright, Nate. You can go.
That was just everything. I love everything was so big and theatrical with him. Like, his voice, the way he was speaking, the words, his inflection, the words he chose, his like actions while he was walking around, like the way he held like his hands to his vest, like that. It's all about playing on with the League of Shadows thing about how you know theatricality. I love this.
And deceptions are powerful.
Bane was my favorite part of the movie.
For the uninitiated, but we are initiated, are we not, Bruce?
Yeah, that bit where he throws like fry across at him, and he's just not bothered.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Don't care.
Well, I mean, for a normal person, I assume it would be like it's gunshots or something, but for Bane, it's like whatever. I understood him perfectly fine. I just couldn't take his voice seriously for some of his scenes. It was just really high.
Like, really loud, what do you mean? Or?
No, just like really. Like he had a menacing presence, and I felt. Especially being the fact that he snapped like 50 necks throughout this movie.
Yeah.
Did anyone ever figure out what accent he was doing?
I don't think it really matters. I mean, especially being that you having it muscled by the mask, so you could just kind of chalk that up to just the mask distorting his voice.
Hold on, I have a thing here. My friend gave an article I found that I sent to him. I'll put it in the chat room when I can get the address. But it's where Hardy got the voice from.
Oh yeah, it's from some gypsy boxer, and that was and it doesn't exactly sound like Bane, but it's like pretty close enough.
I think it works. I mean, it's not. I mean, let's be honest. It's kind of Bane's first real portrayal in movies, and it's not a character that a lot of people are associated with. So, I mean, from now on, Tom Hardy's going. You know, he's going to be the prototype for Bane going forward. Which I don't mind. It was an awesome portrayal. It was an awesome character. He was smart. He was strong. He was brutish, and he was built like a house. And my favorite scene is just really a throwaway. It's like
Tom Hardy's the best.
When he's going up to the stadium, and he's like, "That's the Duffy Sigan voice."
Yes. So my friend, before I saw the movie, he kept going on and on about Bane's speech. Like, you're gonna love Bane's speech. You're gonna love Bane's speech. And he meant the one on the steps of the prison when he shows when he reads Gordon's letter. And he's right. That speech is baller. I love everything about that.
Have you seen it done by like a Mark Hamill impersonator?
Yeah, I saw that.
That was pretty awesome too. Yeah.
He does it as the Joker or whatever.
He's very fan-wanky.
This is really minor, but one thing that it's implied that, you know, Gordon like wanted to read the letter, and you know, a few days later, he still has it in his coat pocket.
It's actually the same night, I believe.
No, because that senator guy that Anne Hathaway like seduced or whatever, so he went missing for a time or something. So doesn't that kind of imply that
I
think he's probably just like too busy searching for the senator, and he didn't bother changing clothes.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was the same day, because it was like, he never made it home or something like that, but
Harvey Dent never made it home last night.
Nobody makes it home in Gotham. even the first DA didn't make it home.
Oh, yeah.
I also, speaking of poor guys, is the mirror dies and nobody makes any reference to that at all.
Yeah, nobody could. It's because, well, they're all, like, Bane's taking over the city, so they got better things to worry about, really.
I know, it's just kind of
there's bigger fish to fry, as it were.
Yeah, it is just cool that they got the same actor back, though. I thought it was, like, consistency, though. That was
cool. But it was kind of weird that he was still mayor, because it's been 8 years.
That makes sense. He
two more terms.
Mayors generally have term limits like the president does. You can run as many times as you want.
I guess it depends on the city.
And he was the mayor who did over the cleaning up of Gotham, of course he'd be real.
Yeah.
I just assumed it was like the Harvey Dent Act helped him stay in office.
Oh, yeah, because it
crime
was
down in Gotham, so you're going to vote for the same guy who keeps crime down, aren't you? So
I believe in Harvey Dent. What did you think of Bruce being out of commission at the start of the movie? That's another.
That's a little bit iffy for me, because I would have preferred it, like, you know, he was Batman for a long time after that night, and then he just gave out as soon as he had, like, a major injury. But that just feels weird to me that he wouldn't be seen for 8 years.
Well, I think it was because he had kind of accomplished his goal, and him being seen, I think, actually would have diminished the police role, because if Gordon and the guys are, like, still letting this mass murderer run around and not catching him, you're going to, you know, people aren't going to take their authority seriously anymore. So he did what was needed.
Okay, so here's the thing. Everyone who's complaining, like, the major complaint I've seen about this movie, people are mad because Batman doesn't just give up. He doesn't just stop being Batman. And the thing is, he doesn't. He never stopped being Batman. He was still Batman, and that's the problem, is that he's been gone for 8 years, and he's been frozen in as the person he was 8 years ago. When Rachel dies, and then Harvey Dent dies, that freezes him as a person. He can't move on from that. Because his whole reason for being Batman is, he even says in the other ones, he wants to stop being it so he can be with Rachel, and as soon as someone comes up who can take his place. And that's what Harvey Dent represented to him. So because Rachel dies, and then Harvey Dent dies, he can't progress. And because of the passage of the Harvey Dent Act, there's no reason for there to even be a Batman anymore. Like, they even say there's still crime, there's still, like, little petty crime and stuff like that, but not any more than any other city. And Batman's not going to be that guy. He's not there to take down the small things. He's there for the larger
And I guess you could make it so that, like, there was more time between Batman Begins and the Dark Knight if you wanted there to be more adventures.
Well, I mean, it's only like a year, but, I mean, the idea is that, yeah, it makes sense, and I find that people are, like, I think, again, it's kind of people...
They never tell you exactly how long it is.
Yeah, I think it's, again, it's people trying to put their and I understand, Batman is a lot of things to a lot of people, so it's people trying to put their stamp on it, because I've seen some people criticize the fact that Batman wouldn't give up over a girl, he wouldn't be, like, an emo in his apartment for 8 years or whatever, but, like, Nolan's Batman is a romantic. He wants to be free of this burden. He wants to live a happy life if it's possible, but he realizes for now it's on him until somebody who doesn't have to hide behind a mask can step up. And even
Nolan's Batman is an Elseworlds. It's not the Batman, but it's a really damn good Elseworlds.
Well, I think it's the Batman. I mean, every Batman is the Batman. It might not be the Batman that works for some people, but it is the Batman. I wouldn't consider it an Elseworld, because what is it an Elseworld of? I mean, is it an Elseworld of the Burton films, or the Schumacher films, or the Adam West film?
He wanted. He's the Batman that people needed.
Yes.
But not the one that deserves right now.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, we've talked about characters and stuff like that. What about the plot? I mean, everybody's saying this is probably the most comic book-y of the Nolan trilogy.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a basic plot.
Pretty comic book-y with a gas attack or whatever it was. But yeah, this was definitely the most comic book-y plot just because of the neutron bomb thing.
I mean, I don't think the bomb itself, I think people were thinking it's comic book-y because... Okay. No, I was saying that we were talking about how people feel this is the most comic booky movie in the franchise. Because, you know, like, the threat is a giant bomb that has a giant countdown on it. But I don't actually think it's a countdown that's ever referenced by the characters. I think it's just something that... It's kind of there for the audience, that so you know time. Because when there's 5 months that pass, and it's pretty much just an indicator to say, okay, 20 days has passed, we're down to 23 days, we're down to a week, we're down to 18 hours and stuff like that. And not necessarily, like, Bane has, like, this evil countdown and he's laughing.
Yeah, like, one of the things I saw that, like, people didn't get the sense of time in this movie, and, yeah, those people definitely weren't paying attention.
Well, I can kind of understand where they're coming from. It's not, they weren't paying attention, but it is also, like, the time gap, like, that 5 months goes by, and, like you'll have one scene, and then, like, it's another month later, and then you have another scene, it's, like, 2 months later, and stuff like that. So it's just that the movie didn't do a poor job, because it does explain it, but it doesn't really give you an idea of, like, time progression well.
It's Nolan doing, like, progression through time through just cuts, rather than having like a caption come across the screen saying like 5 years later or 2 months later or stuff like that. Like most films do, Nolan will just like cut and hope that the audience can just keep up with it.
Yeah,
he's done that in some of his other films as well.
Yeah, and I think again, it's one of the reasons you have the giant countdown on the bomb. Is that because I think it starts up like 57 days or something like that, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be 5 months, but yeah.
Batman gets back just in time to stop it.
Of course he does. But yeah, it's just one of those things where I think it was just I can understand where it was. Not that I don't think it's a deal breaker, but I can understand why people would have problems with how time progressed, because they don't really do a great job of saying like, hey, you know what, 5 months have passed, here we go. And the hero always has to come back in time, so there's that.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's true.
So, I mean, is there anything else you folks want to talk about or mention with this film?
There's something I want to mention, which is, I mentioned earlier, it goes back to themes that I've visited in Batman Begins. And then one of those themes is that, for me, it's kind of like the theme of Nolan's Batman, which is the line Thomas Wayne says in Batman Begins with the "Why do we fall" line. And I really loved how we got the clip again of Thomas Wayne coming down into the well to save Bruce Wayne, because that whole "Why do we fall" is to learn how we can pick ourselves up again. It's really like the theme Christopher Nolan has running throughout his three Batman films. And I also thought when at the end, when it looked like Batman had actually died, he was taking a nod to Harvey Dent's line of "You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself to become the villain." And in a way, Batman does kind of die in like the public eye, so he's died a hero. But then we do know that that Bruce Wayne isn't actually dead. That might be just me. That Harvey Dent thing might be me reading too much into it. But that's how I saw it.
And what I liked about the themes of The Dark Knight Rises kind of contradicted the themes of The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight was like about sometimes you need a lie, and that's just better than the truth. But then The Dark Knight Rises flips that and just says, you know what? No, a victory on a lie is just hollow victory, and you need the truth. And it's not often you'll find a director that will contradict the themes of his previous sequel.
It's kind of funny it's kind of funny because you mentioned, and this was actually one of the things I thought about when I was thinking about the movie, is that the Harvey Dent sign is "You either die a hero or you're strong enough to see yourself become the villain." It actually happens to both of them, because Harvey Dent actually lives long enough to become the villain, but he died the hero. Batman lived long enough to become a villain, but then he ended up dying, quote-unquote, a hero later on, and they kind of reversed it because Harvey Dent does come out as a villain in this film, and Batman becomes the hero, so they both ended up doing both of these things, even though, you know, the original idea is you could either do one or the other, but it is possible for you to die a villain and still be seen as a hero, or vice versa. So yeah, there's that. There was what was the other theme? But we already knew about the theatricality and deception, our powerful agents. That was brought back again. I think this is a stretch, but the criminals thrive on the indulgence of society's understandings is something that, I mean, part of the reason why Bane can do what he does is that fact that nobody's going to touch him as long as he continues to threaten Gotham City, even though he never really shows them proof that he has this. People have to take him at his word.
Yeah, Bane's treating these guys like they're oppressed people, but no, they're killers, thieves, and rapists.
Yeah, but even they are due a fair process.
Yeah.
And part of it, the only reason it works, and it's the fact that he reveals the facade behind Dent and Gordon, and that's the only reason, because then who can you trust if even the good guys do bad things? And that industrial of the prison, so there's that.
And plus, it gets him an army, so, you know.
It gets him an army. I wonder if he killed the people who didn't join him.
Yeah, he probably did.
One minor thing, which, I mean, it's not a deal breaker at all. I just thought it would have been interesting. Is they have that cop who works with Gordon and works with Blake, who's kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah, Foley.
Yeah. I thought it would have been awesome if they had brought back Flash from the first movie so that he would have got his redemption, because that's kind of what the climax is, his redemption, where he charges into battle at second grade and he does end up dying, but...
Yeah, it
would have
been nice for that guy to be the guy who played Holt from Angel. It would have been nice for him to be brought back and him be Foley instead. Him be the head of major crimes.
Okay.
I just thought Flash ended up locked up, to be honest. That's why he didn't come back at all.
Hey. Well,
welcome back. I don't know if and that's kind of the thing. I don't necessarily need a giant capper, but it would have been nice to bring back Flash instead of like having this no name cop who shows up throughout the course of the movie and
also this thing about Foley, did anybody else think he looked like a photocopy of Harvey Dent?
Yeah, he did.
A little bit, I guess.
Maybe it was done intentionally to show that clean-cut style. Because, I mean, he's basically trying to make his name, not necessarily by being a good cop. He lets Bane and the other guy go because they can catch the Batman.
I think part of it is to show, too, that's why, like, they say there's a line about they're going to get rid of Gordon because he's a war hero in a peacetime. But that's all showing that corruption has not entirely left the police department. Like, you get rid of Gordon, it's just going to be right back to business as usual.
Yeah.
And they take Bane doing all his crap and then Commissioner Gordon essentially shaming him into being not a douchebag to show him that.
Even Gordon shaming him doesn't. It's the giant bat symbol that inspires him to do what's right finally, and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean,
one other thing we haven't talked about, which I knew Liam Neeson was going to be in it at some point, but I did like how they did his cameo where he was just like a kind of like a fever vision Bruce was having when he was recovering. That was quite cool.
Yeah. What's funny is I see some people misinterpret it. Like, oh my god, he was really immortal and he could fade. Like, no, that was... What?
Yeah.
No.
Well, he like dissolves on screen, doesn't he? Yeah.
He literally fades away. How do you get that at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, and people were complaining about the fact that he fades away, but I've seen there's a lot of stuff in this movie that it's spelled out like point blank that people are still like, did that really happen? Like, what does this mean and that mean? So it's kind of, you know, it's no implying to the always common denominator in some sense, and people are still misinterpreting it. I did like, and I don't think we mentioned it, that we didn't mention the pit scene at all, but I do like that the pit is kind of like a metaphorical Lazarus pit. Because it's where Bruce goes to be reborn, and it is where
he's...
Oh, yeah.
I haven't thought of it that way, but...
Yeah, I didn't think about that either.
And it is where he sees Roz again, in the Lazarus pit. Mm. So it makes sense, you know. But yeah, he does go to a pit to be reborn and whatever. And that was an awesome scene as well.
Yeah, I'm glad that Bane didn't turn out to be Ra's al Ghul's son, because that would have really bothered me, that.
At first, I was like, when they said them, like, wow, no, it's really just kind of screwing with your head here. Yeah. I actually thought that. But, you know, like, they never really say it's Bane, and it's one of those things where Bruce puts together what he knows in his head, and he comes up with this. Because, I mean, of course, he's talking to himself when he's talking to Roz, so he's just putting together the information that he knows, and this is the conclusion that he gets. So it's not necessarily misleading the audience, it's what Batman knows at this point, and it's what he can put together and make sense in his head.
Yeah, and I love, like, the way that Nolan played with the use of the word man in relation to Talia. Because he did it, like, two or three times, and, like, she was the Trigger Man, she was the man inside, she was the man who got out of the pit, and
well,
just, like,
they never say the man who got out of the pit, they say there was a child.
Yeah.
They're very specific about that.
Okay, yeah, it was a child, but, like, that's just, like, a nice little play on words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, it's you know, it's not necessarily cheating the audience. It's just that Batman, you know, Bruce has limited information to work with, and you form your own opinion. And at that point, it made sense. When it turns out to be Talia, she explains everything to us, and that's all you needed to know. So that worked out well. I thought the pit was a fantastic scene, especially, and this is something that I think a lot of superhero movies have tried. I think Spider-Man 2 succeeded to a degree, but the whole notion is usually what happens is at some point superheroes give up their powers in all of these movies. Superman did it in Superman 2, Spider-Man does it in Spider-Man 2, and stuff like that. But
yeah, that was
is
my favorite part of Wolverine when he gave up his adamantium.
I mean, Drew Vee was trying to do it in X-Men 3.
In Rogue?
Wait, Rogue was trying to do it.
There you go. I want Jubilee to give up her powers. But yeah, this is like the first. I mean, granted, Batman doesn't have powers to give up, but this is the first time you can kind of. It kind of makes sense because it's taken from him. He can't be Batman. He's physically broken, and he has to overcome these odds. For the most part, it's like Superman. Like I also was saying, I'm going to give up my powers. Spider-Man, I want to be with Mary Jane. I'm going to give up my powers. Batman is like, I have my back broken, and I'm still going to fight to become this guy, but physically, it's really tough for me to do right now.
Yeah, it's also the first time that a hero on screen went to the end of his natural life cycle as a hero. Because people just, like, it just normally stays in the middle. It never goes to the end.
No, it's very rare you see the full life-death thing. Except maybe in Watchmen. And even then.
Yeah, maybe then.
And nothing happened before Watchmen. Nothing happened.
That'd be an awesome comic series to examine what happened before Watchmen.
You can go to hell, girl.
They could even call it, like, before Watchmen.
Watchmen babies, like in The Simpsons.
I wonder if they're going to get Zack Snyder to do before Watchmen movie.
I really doubt it.
So yeah, I mean, is there anything else you want to mention before?
See, I had a whole monologue I had earlier, and I forgot. I don't really know a way to bring it in gracefully.
Well, you can do it now.
I was working on it earlier. It was related to what I said before about how he never stopped being Batman. So, like from Rachel's and Harvey's death till this movie, he never stopped being Batman in his mind, which is he was mentally broken, I guess would be the way to put it. But that's why he loses to Bane, is that and Bane even says it, you're fighting like a younger man. That he thinks of himself still as being Batman, the Batman from then. That he thinks, oh, if I just get this taken care of, I can just jump right back into the swing of things. And Bane just completely dominates him. Like, there's no point in that fight where Batman has the upper hand at all. And it's because, like you said, he still thinks of himself as the big hero, the protector of Gotham, the one who knows what he's doing and can fix everything. When Bane is just like toying with him, saying, "No, you are the problem here. You invited all this in through your actions, and now we're going to completely break you. You are not afraid of anything, and that is why when he's in the pit and he learns to fear again is such a big deal."
Yeah, because, and you know, it plays again into what Alfred was saying, and why Alfred really, you know, why ends up beefing him is because he's not afraid that he'll die, he's afraid that he wants to die.
Yeah, and it's obvious in his approach to the fights too. Like in the first fight, he's on the offensive. He's trying to pummel and break down Bane through brute strength. And in the second fight, he's more afraid. Like, I know this dude can take me out. So he lets Bane take all the offense and just keeps dodging and hitting when he can.
Yeah, and Bane is a monster because he punches through those, like,
tremendous.
Yeah, with no problem. That was vicious.
I want to mention as well that on the technical filmmaking side, I think the action's really come a long way since Begins.
You know what I mean?
You're breaking
I
up.
Didn't hear a word of what Nick just said then, sorry.
But
the action was like much smoother and you could piece it together what was happening.
I think again that kind of speaks to the evolution of not just the character but the threat, because in the first movie the only person who can kind of stand toe-to-toe to him is Roz, so everybody else is just him beating the snot out of real quickly and stuff like that. It's fast, it's not an art form. But by the time you get to The Dark Knight Rises, Bane's a physical threat. Bane, you know, like, it's not like he can just kind of outsmart Bane. Because if you compare it to like, when they're taking out the goons in the sewers, those are pretty quick scenes. It's just like, here's a guy, Catwoman takes him out, here's a guy, Batman takes him out, and stuff like that. But Bane, you know, Bane's not sweating him. Bane's taking his stride. He's doing what he needs to do, and Batman's trying to throw everything at him, but nothing's ending for him. I really cringed when he started punching him in the head. And he had cracked the skull, well, not the skull, the cow. That scene really made me cringe. I'm like, is he gonna
give him that was pretty
damage?
Awesome.
And, you know, it was like the first, I mean, Grant, I would say I feared that Batman would die throughout this entire movie. Because, like, most of the speech is, like, Alfred tells him he want to die. Vic says, you know, he's telling Vic, like, when I die, Batman can beat anybody. Like, everything's, like, you know, like, it's Catwoman tells him he's going to die. He's giving the city everything.
Yep.
And I mean, technically speaking, they do kill him off in a way. Symbolically, I guess. But, you know, Bruce lives and he finds happiness. And it's interesting that he finds happiness with Catwoman because she is kind of the same. Like, he can never find happiness with Rachel because Rachel was whole while Bruce is broken, where Bruce and, you know, are both broken characters. But they learn to deal with it.
So you want to jump into the ending now?
Yeah, I guess we can jump into the ending.
The extended ending, which Nolan just loves, giving his films like six different endings.
Welcome back again.
Hey, Nick, you're right.
Oh, the universe just not want me to say anything intelligent about this fucking movie.
Well, we're just about to talk about the ending. So, I mean, I guess the first thing to talk about is the autopilot, which a lot of people seem to miss again. The autopilot.
You know how they missed said like three or four times in the movie.
I didn't get that at
all. I don't see how anybody missed it.
Yeah, the thing with me,
he would fix it at some point.
Yeah.
It's not even that he fixes it at some point. He literally fixes it when he gets it, because you find out it was fixed 6 months ago, which is when, this is before Bane took over, so it's like right before he came back.
When Lucius showed it to him, he was like, yeah, alright, I'll take care of it.
He probably did it on his way home.
I think the epilogue thing, was it the scene where the Morgan Freeman finds out about the autopilot? I think it came out right after the you know, the Robin line, I think.
Yeah,
so I think maybe a lot of people missed it, because, you know, in my theater, quite a few people were clapping during the Robin line.
Well, it's that, and people, because the autopilot's first brought up when he's showing the bat, and it's like, oh, you know, like, we haven't got the autopilot to work. And he's like, what does he say? It's like a backhanded compliment to Bruce. He's like, that's busy.
You have to take the mind less busy, or a better mind than mine. A less busy one.
And, you know, it's like, you can do it because you have the time and the resources.
That's exactly what he means by that. Whether it's like just, oh, you have a lot of free time, or it's just because of the whole superhero, I can control my shit.
Yeah, I mean, he finds ways to turn all these things into, you know, productive uses for Batman. The second time is when they go to the Bat to get the EMP. He's like, "Have you fixed the autopilot?" He's like, "Not yet." And then when he takes the bomb off, Catwoman says, "You need one." It's like, "No autopilot or whatever." So it's mentioned like 15 times. So you have to figure the autopilot's going to play into the end. And then it does fit into the end, and then it's just this, like, you know, like, it was fixed by Bruce 6 months ago, and it's a software patch, because people also don't understand that this is a different bat than the one he throws up.
Mm-hmm. I guess he wants people to think he's dead, and he might, I don't know if he necessarily saw that coming, but once he hit that point where he was, pretty sure he was, you know, going to try to get rid of the bomb. Like, he's not going to be like, "Oh no, totally fix that autopilot, but I'm about to die. Laters."
Yeah, and bye. I mean, it was nice of him to get to retire. We've already mentioned the Robin John Vake thing. I think it's cool. Gordon's reaction was awesome when he finds the fixed bat signal.
Oh yeah, I love that bit. That was so good.
That was very cool.
Oh, yeah, that was nice.
No, I do question why they kept it on the roof for 8 years since it was broken, but...
It's a tall building. You probably couldn't move it.
It just
reminds... Yeah, it's pretty difficult to move something like that and then transport it downstairs and all that stuff. Especially without purposely acknowledging, "Oh, yeah, no, I was totally Batman's buddy. He killed my friend, but..."
It actually reminded me of the line in The Dark Knight, and which is why I explained it. Like, I think he's talking to Harvey, and he's like, "If you have a problem with faulty electronics, I'll take it up with maintenance or something like that." It is that.
There's a line in Dark Knight which says this office has no position on the vigilante known as the Batman.
Yeah.
He can't specifically say, "Oh, this is mine," because then that makes it an official thing. Especially now that Batman's wanted for murder.
Yeah, that's especially Batman. And honestly, if nobody saw the Alfred thing coming after the start of the movie, I don't know what movie you're watching. They made it faintly obvious.
Do you know, the thing with that is, the thing with Alfred sat in the restaurant, I actually thought Nolan was going to pull an Inception again where we don't see what Alfred's actually looking at, where he leaves it to the audience to decide what happens, but then we got the shot of Bruce,
you know,
and Catwoman.
I am happy.
What's funny is
that
I complained to
people
saying they wanted that. Like, I would have much rather if they just cut to Alfred, like, seeing someone and, like, giving a nod and then get to, like, Dark Knight Rises. Like, no. you obviously, that would be cool, but you can't pull that shit with, like, this mainstream superhero movie. It's people would, as much as people complained about Inception, like, "Well, what happened?" They would flip to this shit.
Yeah, and that's why I'm happy he did.
Like, yeah, quiet. Yeah.
Because it'd be like, "Did he see Bruce? Was it actually Bruce? Who did he chase?" I'm like, yeah, I do not want that. There's enough.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know what? I'm happy Bruce is alive. You see it? Is Catwoman's there? Like, people are still trying to say, "Oh, it's in Alfred's head. He's imagining it." I'm like, no. Bruce is
I know he's old and stuff, but he's not like senile, is he? Come on. It's Alfred.
I'm just like, I'm happy.
What's great is I like that it's the through line through the movie, too, of not just, you know, Alfred setting it up that he does that, but that you see whenever Selina's around Bruce, he lightens up. He's, like, a little looser than he has been in all the other movies. That, like, there is that weird, like, chemistry where he's actually, like, cracks jokes and is like, it's a little bit more open with himself. So it does set up that, if eventually this gets to be a thing, they could conceivably run away.
It's actually
especially
kind of...
she had the wife either... existence from the Earth memory stick.
Yeah, I was also going to say, it's also kind of funny, because, like, everybody wants him to get hit in this movie. Because Alfred's like, "Oh, you know, Miranda Tate's actually pretty attractive," and then Lucius Fox is like, "Your girlfriend's kind of cute," when Catwoman beats up Bane's goons and all this other stuff. I thought the ending... ending really made the movie for me. I thought it was an amazing... capper to the franchise. You know, everybody kind of got that moment to shine.
What did everyone think of
this iteration of the franchise anyway?
Yeah.
What did everyone think of the statue? The Batman statue?
I thought it was cool.
Oh,
I
mean, it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Sure.
I don't know what's going to happen when Vic shows up as Batman, but, you know.
I'm Batman.
Yeah, it was an awesome touch. And yeah, I'm happy, because I mean, I've always, you know, the idea is, especially in the Nolan film, is that Batman isn't kind of forced into this life for the rest of his life. He can find happiness, and he does. And I know some people are upset about it, because some people just hate happy people, but it's nice that he gets something.
Dark Knight Returns. Which, let's be honest, has kind of a happy ending. So it seems to forget that Batman doesn't actually die in Dark Knight Returns.
He fakes his death just like this. So yeah. I mean, I guess for final thoughts while we're wrapping, even though we kind of mentioned it before on and off, but, I mean, as a whole, what did you think of the trilogy? And it's
awesome. It's a great trilogy for Batman.
I think it's a great trilogy for cinema.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. It's a great trilogy altogether.
And since we don't know, and since it might be a good while before we get another one like it, we may as well enjoy it while it's here, rather than be slash film and nip every little fucking thing out of it. Because it's like, Warner Brothers have basically let Christopher Nolan do what he wants with the biggest, like, character for three movies, and in return, he's given, like, the studio and audiences a great trilogy and a great Batman story, so, you know.
Well, I think they give him what he wants because, let's be honest, you're not gonna scoff at a $1 billion movie. Christopher Nolan could ask to have sex with one of their daughters in their offices, and I think they'd give it to him at this point.
Yeah, if Chris Nolan would, even if he never made Batman, if he just had his mindfuck trilogy of Memento, Prestige, and Inception, would be one of my favorite directors. And the fact that he did those, plus, like, three mainstream, relatively serious, like, they're still goofy and comic booky in some ways, but they're not, like, you know, campy or you know, making fun of it or anything.
Yeah.
About one of my favorite characters in fiction. It's amazing to me that these movies got made at all.
Yeah, because of everything he's done in the last 10 years, Christopher Nolan has my eternal respect, and I'll see whatever he does. Like, the only other person to do that with is David Fincher. And people will be studying his films for forever. Just like Fincher. And people will learn from him.
Yeah, I think this will be, like, considered one of the greatest superhero movies in for a while now.
I think so. I mean, it's going to depend, because, again, I think, you know, like, Avengers and stuff, they go for different things, and it really depends on what you look for in your superhero movies, because you can go, I mean, Avengers kind of goes more comic booky, over-the-top, fun, exciting, action-packed, and this is more of the cerebral, like, what makes this character tick, what drives him, and what motivates him. You still get the comic book dressings, but, you know, it's a bit more grounded, I guess, or real.
Yeah, and Nolan actually made the movie.
There was something that just relates back to the ending, but this does, someone pointed out something I was reading earlier. But they pointed out that both Avengers and Dark Knight Rises end with a billionaire in an armored vehicle flying a nuke out over the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
That's a weird coincidence.
And they both get to tell the tale.
Yes. They both rise.
They both rise. So yes, there's that. So I think we're good to go.
I'm less than 24 hours removed from seeing the movie the first time, and I kind of want to see it again.
That's kind of the same thing I want. It's kind of interesting because I came out of the movie and I still kind of feel this way. I don't think it's the strongest one in the trilogy. It's a good movie. I still think I prefer, like, the other two, but they're really close in quality anyhow. But the more I've talked about it with people and the more I've gotten feedback, the more it's kind of like, it's a really smart movie. Like, there's a lot of layers to it that, I mean, maybe it's not, I don't know if it's a smart movie, but it's a lot to it, and it seems like a lot of people miss it. And just trying to explain some of these plot holes and inconsistencies that people have find, the stuff that you can kind of tie together, like how this scene works with that scene, has really made me appreciate the movie. And now that I, you know, I want to see it now with all this thing in the back of my mind, back of my head looking for these little hints here and there.
That's the thing about Nolan, is that all his movies you can nitpick to death if you really want to, because he's... That there's some, I was reading a review earlier where he talked about how he thinks Nolan making Inception affected how he made this movie, in how he edited it and put scenes together, and that he seems to try to enter scenes with the minimum amount of information as possible that the audience needs to figure it out. Which is unusual. People are used to having movies where everything is explained and, you know, oh, I see this, needs X, and we see that, and that's why there's the complaints of people saying, oh, characters appear out of nowhere. Like, that's, he's playing around with logic and editing and flow of a story. And his movies all have a lot of big ideas to them. Which is, that's why I think I like Nolan so much, is even if it's not necessarily the tightest script in the world, there's a lot of ideas and stuff going on behind it.
Yeah. And it works. So, and I can't wait. I want to see this in IMAX. I'm going to try to see that. But I can't wait to have this at home and watch all three of them back to back. Because, like, even when I watched The Batman Begins and The Dark Knight in front of it, it's like, you didn't know what to look for in those movies. You were just watching them because they're entertaining. And it does help to, like, you know, but now you can kind of watch them and kind of for these little hints or these little things that he does come back to a lot of times in The Dark Knight Rises. So, yeah, it is.
I would like to end on I'd like to close out on a weird anecdote. I saw it last night with my girlfriend. My girlfriend has never seen Batman Begins or The Dark Knight.
How is that possible?
Because she's weird about violence sometimes, but she doesn't like graphic violence, and Two-Face's face and the Scarecrow imagery, like, she was told in advance, you shouldn't see this, and I agree, it would really bother her and, like, give her a lot of problems. But she saw this one, she's like, I loved it. She loved everything about it other than Anne Hathaway, because she just hates her as an actress. Which I don't understand.
I've heard that before, but I think she does such a great job in it.
But no, like, having no frame of reference, like, yeah.
Did he cut out again?
He did.
Yeah.
I can't understand a word he's saying. I feel really bad because I'm sure it's really.
Les Miserables. That's just because I love that show.
Okay, so I think that's it for us this week. I mean, we're over an hour, almost hour and a half now. So join us next week. I don't know what we're talking about. That's never a good thing. Actually, Nick still has to host an episode at some point, but he...
Because
he didn't host... Yeah, we'll talk about this off air. But for Nick, is who vanished again, Scott... Sal and Anthony, this has been Nerds on the Rocks.
Me!
This has been Nerds on the Rocks, episode 103.
Where's the trigger?
Bye.
Bye.